The following podcast is brought to you by the Jonas Podcasting Network, found exclusively at WrestlingWithJonas.com. But I'm sure G-Money fans out there will be urging you to be part of that tournament. Hopefully, you won't have to go through so many hurdles just to get there this time.
It was weird. I'm still grumpy about it in a sense. I had, before going into that tournament, I was, 5-0 or 6-0?
Yeah.
And I was petitioning for it for 2.5 years. And yet Crowley made a tweet and got put into that tournament. And I still want to beat up Crowley because of that.
Absolutely. I'd like to see that. But as I mentioned earlier, today marks exactly 1 year since fans came back to the Electric Ballroom, Chapter 127. You kicked off that, as we said, with your wonderful spaceman costume, your astronaut.
Yeah.
But the previous year, you were part of the very last Peckamira show in this main event. Your first World Championship bite of the cherry against then-champion Karen Noir. I've got to say, I was already a fan of yours before that match, but I think that the promo you cut with just the spotlight, the chair, you in the ring, it was a different type of G-Money that we saw cut that promo. It was a very serious, heartfelt G-Money and very serious, heartfelt promo that kind of led us brilliantly into that main event match. And I think that definitely put you on the map as far as I'm concerned, and many others. You've been on the scene for many years, but that was the moment where I felt G-Money kind of got to that next level. But tell us a bit about that whole build and your match with Karen Noir. I watched it back in preparation for this. It still stands up. It's a tremendous match. And like I say, the whole build up to that is very, very memorable.
So the build up to that, I knew that there was only... I knew after I won that number one contenders match, there was only one, Peckham show left. That was it. There was no more opportunities until whenever we returned. And although that aired in the November, that was recorded back in the August. So I said, well, let's actually get some build for this then. This hasn't been a long build, much like my match with Spike. It's not been, months in the making or anything. I am a number one contender and I want this match to be as hyped as possible because it actually means something to me. And I think people get desensitized a lot. Fans in wrestling get desensitized a lot to how much these opportunities can mean. So I actually did properly speak from the heart about that. And I think there is such a value in honesty in professional wrestling, because I think a lot of people think they know what professional wrestling is, and that's absolutely fair. But if you can just say, actually, no, no one was addressing, because we weren't allowed to really, well, it's not that we weren't allowed, but it was stupid too, but where were the crowds? The people who got me to NPS, the people who backed me for Gene for Super Strong Style, where were they? This was the biggest opportunity in my career and nobody could be there. And that is gutting as a performer who, I feast on the audience. When I think about I am doing it for them and their reaction just spur me on. I don't think I'd be in the position I am without people like them. And I'm not saying I'm high up or anything like that. Don't be daft. But to the little place I've gotten in my career, that's thanks to them, or to blame on them. It depends on which way you look at it. So that was what that promo was. It wasn't really, wasn't
this Sunday at the Superdome. It's me and you, Karen Noir.
It's, it was real. It wasn't wrestling panto bullshit. It was, I'm doing this, and it sucks that it's not in the right situation, but I'm doing it. And I think it resonated with a lot of people. I saw it get shared across the internet quite a bit, and it was really nice to see, because,
It showed that you did have a serious side to you, and I think
I'm a human being, I have feelings.
Yeah, absolutely. And so tell us a bit about that match, because I don't know whether you'd faced Tom or Kara previously. I don't think you faced him since. That match was pretty special. And I've spoken to many Progress talent that wrestled during the Peckham era, and they said that there was something different about wrestling in that venue with no fans, just the announcers, the cameramen, you two in the ring. But the action was always good in the Peckham era, and that match I think was one of the best matches from that 10 or 11 months. Yeah.
Thank you. So I've wrestled. Like me and Cara, we go back a long way. We go back to the London School of Lucha Libre together where we used to train. Great school, what it was back then under the arches in Bethnal Green. People coming out that like Nina Samuels, Will Ospreay, Tom, obviously Cara, Misen. Like I'm kind of the worst of a good bunch there, but still. I've got Callum Newman now coming up, and I think he started there too. I'd worked with Cara a few times, worked at Lucha Britannia together. I can't remember where we else we have, but I'm sure we have. I'm sure I wrestled Black Belt Tom Dawkins at some point in my career. But getting in there with Cara, I think that was our first time in there together. It was good, and there was that whole mentality and insecurity in me, which I think it exists in a lot of people, of like. I think wrestling gatekeeps a lot of people like me into certain positions. Oh, you're the funny one. Oh, you're the comedy one. Let's keep you at the main event. So we had the whole kind of running story, which I believe was real, of I deserve to be here because I genuinely believe I do. And fuck anyone who thinks otherwise. I'm going to have that faith in myself for once. So we told that story. I think it was really nice. And to say, Cara in a while doesn't speak. He spoke to me after that match in the middle of the ring. You can see us having a little bit of a chat together, and he said some lovely things to me. But to ruin all of that by telling you the truth, I shat myself 36 seconds into that match. I didn't know I had food poisoning until I took a kick. And I was like, oh, dear. So I had another 20 minutes with that. It's disgusting, but . To take all of the mood out of that situation, I did a bad one.
Yeah, well, this is exactly the reason why you wear them big boy pants, Gene, just to keep any accidents from escaping, I suppose.
Did not know I had food poisoning, and then I found out I had food poisoning very quickly.
I had the privilege, my first ever Progress show was in Birmingham, March 2019. Coming up 4 years ago, and it's my first ever Progress show, chapter 86. We was all ready for the start of the show, and there was a dark match. Out comes yourself, fantastic. First time I've seen Beano in the ring. Let's see what he has to offer, and who should be your opponent. But at the time, he was the NXT UK champion, Pete Dunne, coming out in his hometown. It was a dark match, so you won't see this anywhere. So the fans inside. The O2 in Birmingham had the privilege of seeing this, but the pop that Pete Dunne got when he came out through them curtains and the match that you two put on, I will remember, for the rest of my days. And like I said to you before we went live, that match, that pop, just seeing you and Pete Dunne, completely unexpected appearance from Pete Dunne as well. Obviously, he was doing Progress a favour, signed to WWE, the NXT UK champion. But take us back to that time. I mean, first of all, and I think if we had a question about that, let's have a quick look. Here we go, from Ashley Clements, friend of the show, fan of yours. How did you find out you were going to be working Pete Dunne at Progress in Birmingham? So I think Ashley was there as well. Give us your side of events, because it was an awesome day.
Yeah, it was a mad day, absolutely crazy day. So in fact, I'll take you over the course of the weekend. So whatever day that fell on, whether it was a Saturday or a Sunday, the week before, I knew that there was a gang was going to help out at a Progress show in Birmingham. I knew what it entailed. It's normally just like setting the chairs up, setting the ring up. Being ringside during the show and making sure all the rest of the cats safe and whatnot, and making sure the crowd are happy and and making sure everything's in line. So it's like, yeah, that's fine. But the day before, I had a rave that I had booked for months with some family and some friends of mine. So I thought that's fine. I can go to the rave and then I can go to Progress the next day. That's fine. Like I'm just doing the ring crew, so it'd be fairly easy. I'll get like a half decent sleep, and if I have to sleep on the way up there, I'll sleep on the way up there. That's fine. Whatever. Go to Bristol. Go to the rave. Get back at 2 o'clock in the morning. Don't get much sleep. Wake up after a few hours of sleep, and then Brendan was come to pick me up from Newport. So whatever. Get up. Have a shower. Get dressed and whatnot. We were meeting Brendan. So I was meeting Brendan somewhere. So I got to the end of my drive, and a tree had fallen down over my drive because it was terrible weather that evening or that morning. I was like, Brendan, like again, I was still completely pissed at this time. I was like, Brendan, I'll tell you what, mate, I'm just gonna stay home, and I'll just message whoever it is to apologize and say that I can't make it. And Brendan, thankfully. Honestly, I can never thank Brendan enough for being like, don't be stupid, I'm coming to pick you up now. It's like, oh, first, okay. So Brendan then left our meetup, our pickup point, and he drove to Newport then to come and grab me for the Progress show. So we drove up there, and I was progressively getting better during the day. I was fine. I was having some water and whatnot. And we stopped off a few times to get a few bites to eat on the way up to the O2. Anyway, we got there. We did the ring crew, set the chairs up, set the tables up, set the ring and all. Got all the room looking proper and tidy. And then before the show, they were like, "Look, you got an hour. If you want to go grab a bite to eat, go and grab a bite to eat. Have a walk in the city. Do what you want to do. Go grab a drink or something." So sure, whatever. A small group of us went for a walk to like the town, just grab some food and stuff. So after a rave, I'm thinking, lovely, I'm gonna go here now and get some chips, some chicken nuggets, maybe a kebab. And a can of Coke, you know what I mean? I was laughing. I was saying, that's great.
So all the unhealthy stuff, yeah.
They went that weekend, they all went out the window. But I said, I'm going to take this back and I'm going to sit there and sit down ringside now and eat my chips and all before I ring through the show. So I walked back in, and since we've been gone, a few more people have turned up. I noticed Pete was there. Walked past, gave him a fist bump, said hello. And then sat down, had my food. As I was eating my food, it's like chips and like garlic mayo dripping down me. It was great. I looked over, and next to the ring, there was Pete and Damian Dunn chatting. Again, I wasn't really taking much notice. I was being observant, just looking around what was going on. I noticed Pete chatting to Damian. And then as I look up and look at the pair of them, I see them both look at me at the same time. And it's you know when you know someone's talking about you without them... Without actually knowing that they're talking about you, you think like, okay, I look back down my food, I'm thinking like, right, I'm thinking too much about this now. So I carry on eating my food, and then I see that they disband. Pete goes one way, Damien starts walking towards me. In the first question Damien asked, before even saying hello to me, because I hadn't said hello to him yet, he came over and asked if I had my gear on me. And I sort of looked at him with like a mouth full of food and was like, yeah, why? He was like, put your food down, because Pete said he wants to wrestle you before the show.
Mate.
And I was like, nah. I was like, nah, nah. No, he didn't. Like, I was like, Damien, shut up. But you know what I mean? Because I'm on quite close terms with Damien. He's a good geezer. And I was like, oh, shut up, Damien. You know what I mean? Just sit down. But he was like, Harry, I'm being serious. Like, and kind of talks. He is a very jokey geezer. And he was being dead serious. So at this point now, I was thinking, oh, okay, I got to put his food down. And then it was all kind of like, I heard it here, I heard it there, but nothing was official. No one had actually come up to me and told me that this was happening. So now we're about half an hour before the show starts. I'm thinking, right, no one's told me. I've got my Progress ring crew jacket on. I'm ready to ring crew. I thought it was just like him taking a piss. I thought nothing of it, whatever. So before the show starts, I pop to the toilet. I'm thinking like, that's weird that was said. That's really odd that he came up to me and say something like that. Whatever. As I leave the toilet, one of the other ring crew boys are walking towards me, and he said, "It's happening." And I looked at him at the same time. I was like, "What is happening?" He's like, "Yeah, it's happening. Get your gear." I was like, "Mate, the show starts in like half an hour." So Brendan was like, right, I'm going to go and get your gear. So Brendan sprinted all the way to the car park. That was like 10, 15 minutes away to grab my suitcase, bring my suitcase back. I got taken backstage to have a chat with Pete about the match and whatnot. And from there we probably had about 20 minutes, literally. I got suited and booted and ready to go. And and then the fridge door opened.
Unbelievable. And as I said, just being a spectator, like I say, it was completely unexpected to see Pete Dunne come through them curtains. When his music started, the place just erupted. You would have been in the ring by that point. You must have had some pretty big goosebumps on your arms when Pete Dunne's music started. And that pop, I'll never forget that pop for as long as I live.
Yeah, it was crazy. I remember being stood in the corner of the ring. And as the music hit, even within like a second, obviously, all the Birmingham fans all know, as soon as the first note hit of his song, the first like bit of bass hit in the O2 Academy, doors rumbling, the chairs are going. And I remember Brendan was like ring crewing on my corner of the ring. So he was on like my ring post, about 3 or 4 yards away. And as that happened, I normally keep my character pretty well, but I broke. I must say that that broke me. So I turned and looked at Brendan and I kind of pulled like a, oh shit, like, uh-oh. but it's all awesome memories. They're all great memories, all wicked memories.
Absolutely. I read somewhere that it was probably when you was about 15 years old. So, you know, 5 or 6 years ago. Tell us that story of how and when you first met Will Ospreay.
Right. This is probably going to be a long one.
Go on.
But so, right. So I was training at a school called Knuckle Locks in Brixton. So it was like the old Progress training school. They did like an 8-week course. So I just finished the 8-week course. I got into the training school and I think it was a Matt Riddle seminar. And I remember going up to mum and dad and being like, look, can I go? And I was like, well, how much is it? And I think it was like 30 quid. And they was like, yeah, fine. We'll just, you know, there you go. Do it. It's fine. And then I went to school. I think it was the next week. So I was like, oh, thanks for doing the Matt Riddle one. Really appreciate it. I went to school, come back, logged onto Facebook. And they Knuckles posted 2-day Will Ospreay seminar. And I remember looking at it and going, oh, fuck. I don't want to ask him because, like, I've just asked for this Matt Riddle one and £30 is a lot of money. So I was like, I'm not gonna ask. And then I think my mum saw me kind of staring at it and I was like, oh, I really want to ask, but I don't. So I just put my phone down. And I was like, I'm not going to look at it. I'm not going to ask. I'll just do the Matt Riddle one and shut up and be happy. And this was a time where wrestling was like, it was kind of going like really, really bad. Like, I won't get into that bit, but it was just like, it all sucked. So I was like, I'll kind of just maybe pack it in. And then, but I was just like, I'll leave. I won't ask about the Will Ospreay one. And then my dad goes, oh, what are you looking at? I was like, nothing, don't worry. He goes, oh, well, all right. Well, make sure you're not doing nothing next weekend. You're going to go train with Will Ospreay. I'm like, huh? And he goes, yeah, you're doing the 2-day seminar. And I was like, nah, all right, you know, because my dad likes to take the piss a lot as well. And I was like, yeah, whatever. And I kind of brushed it off. And he went, no, here you go. Here's like the confirmation and all that. Because they was like, make sure you book it and get the message. I was like, oh shit, no way. Gave him my mum and dad a hug and all that. And then, went to the seminar. And then met Will from there. And I think it was the first day, did the training with Will. And he was calling me like Eddie Guerrero, like the way I was moving and stuff, which I thought was kind of cool. I think at the time I didn't have a clue. I knew who Eddie Guerrero was, but I didn't really know like kind of what he did in wrestling. Like I knew the name. And I remember going up to him, I was like, oh, thanks, man. I really appreciate it. Like I'm kind of quitting, but you know, thanks. I really appreciate it. He went like, what? I was like, yeah, man. It's probably my last training session, but it was fun because we were doing top rope runners and stuff. And then my mum and dad had to like sit at the back of the sessions because I was like, yeah, like 15. So I couldn't really go to Brixton by myself. And they was, oh, are they your parents back there? I was like, yeah, it's my mum and dad. He's gone, all right, cool. He just walked straight over to him. And I remember some people going like, thanks, Will. And he was kind of like going, yeah, cool. See you later. And then going straight to my dad. And it was basically like, do not let him quit. Like there's only some people that kind of have a talent. He's got a talent. Do not let him quit. And then my dad was like, well, if you're saying that, then I guess we can't let him quit. And I was like, oh, if he's saying that, then this is really cool. And then went to the one the next day, and then I think we was doing more like top right runners and stuff. And then he come up to literally like, do not quit. And then he pushed me to go to the London School of Lucha Libre. And then from there, that's where he kind of really took me under his wing and was like, right, I'm going to help you now. So yeah,
that's incredible. The
story of meeting our William. So if my mum and dad didn't have that surprise.
Yeah. Well, we might not be speaking to Callum Newman here in 2023, but and another competitor that you obviously proved that you were more than worthy to be in the ring with. And we got to talk about Pac. And I think it's nearly a year to the day when you faced him for the AEW All Atlantic Championship. And of course, earlier that day, you won a scramble match to earn that right to face Pac. But I mean, a lot of people I've spoken to and a lot of the write-ups and reports about that match saying that that's easily inside their, you know, top five, top 10 matches of the entire 2022. And that match was incredible. It was brutal. I think you even took a top rope brainbuster just before he hit the black arrow, which looked brutal, my friends. But I mean, that day and that match, that experience, tell us about it.
So like I only really found out a day or two before what was
really
going to happen and stuff. So it's real, like, I knew the scramble and one person from the scramble would advance to face him for the belt. A couple of days before, like, I found out it'd be me and I was like, oh shit, like, wow, this is like a big deal now. Like, you know, just like a dream match, like level stuff, like from watching him and like Noah to watching him PWG to watching him like in NXT and then on WWE TV when I was like 15. To like actually wrestling him, and I just remember being in the ring when he was making his entrance, and I was just like so overwhelmed, like it didn't feel real. Like watching him do his thing, I'm like, I'm about to like wrestle him. And again, he was super nice, like he was really up for like listening to my ideas and like really liked some of the spots I had and all of that. So it's like, I feel like it's such a nice reassurance and really like makes you feel good about yourself as a wrestler when like what you're saying is being received really well from someone like that level of a wrestler. So it was like a really good day, really good day. And then like everything that followed after, like seeing it on Instagram and Twitter and stuff, and hearing like saying like seeing like Taz's tweets, like having people send me like Taz's tweets saying like how good of a match it was. It's really nice to sort of get that feedback, and that sort of, you know, that really does boost your confidence as a wrestler.
Absolutely. And the match was featured on AEW Dark, I believe, as well.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's really cool. I'm just going to bring up the match graphic there because it's a pretty sweet graphic. But, I mean, talk about the match, because Pac is very intense, isn't he? He's very intense, very fast-paced. He hits hard. Not that I would know, but from having seen a lot of his matches, he hits hard.
Yeah.
And that brainbuster, that top rope brainbuster, wow. Tell us about the match and kind of, obviously, you know, you must have enjoyed the hell out of it, thrilled to be in there with, you know, somebody like Pac who's been there, done that, bought the t-shirt. But what were some of your main takeaways from being in the ring with somebody like that? And tell us a bit about the match itself.
So the match itself, like you said, he's obviously like a high flyer, he's got a real fast pace. But it's one of the slowest matches I've had that year, like,
really?
Ever, in a good way. Like, really sort of, my main takeaway, as you say, would probably be, like, the way I pace myself now as a wrestler, especially as, like, a heel, or, like, when I'm playing bad guy and whatnot, the way, like, I, like, conduct myself and carry myself around the ring, it really sort of taught me to be slow and take my time with everything. And then on the flip side, when I was in there and, like, I'm the babyface taking the beat down, it really taught me like to like really like sell more. Like, it sounds like such a simple basic thing that, you know, you hear a lot, but it really does, like those experiences and like just listening to him like and following his lead, like it really like upped my game as a wrestler. And there's a lot of cool spots as well as it, like, you know, for like having some sort of a story. So it wasn't just like a spot fest, but like had like some nice moments in and stuff. Like, we had a couple spots where I would do, like, he went for the 450 and missed, and then I hit the 450, and then, like, I went for a moonsault dive and missed, and then he hit something else. So it was, like, tit for tat and stuff like that. So it was real nice and, like, really, really good being in the ring with him, and I took, like, a lot away, definitely.
you're the only person that was the world champion during that time. So getting your kind of insight and perspective into what it was like as the world champion during them Peckham tapings, I'd love to know kind of where your mind was at. And like I say, a couple of stats, you know, you defended your championship 13 times during the Peckham era, which is truly phenomenal. You defended your championships 19 times in total, but 13 of those was in the Peckham era. So you could say that, you know, a lion's share of your championship defences was in front of nobody.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. It was really tough. And I think that it allowed me to perform differently. It allowed me to see wrestling in a different way. And yes, wrestling, I feel, still doesn't work without an audience. However, I was determined to try to make it work. And rather than connect with people in the room, I'm going to try to connect with you through a lens. And I feel that it made me better with my storytelling, because I had to be more precise with my story beats to be able to connect with you, that being the audience. And I think that whole group during that period of time, we grew as a team. And we worked so hard. Like those, as you all may know now, it was filmed 4 days back to back. That would mean sometimes I would do 3 main events in a row. And I was, you know, I would then gear myself up for the next block of tapings. It was hard. It really was hard, but we all stuck together and we powered through that. And I still think some of those matches, if you go back and watch them, are just incredible. Oh. You know, and
the action inside the Peckham Theatre was phenomenal. Every single show, the matches were solid all the way through. You couldn't fault the action.
Yeah, 100%. And like everyone put their all into it. I started with Dan Maloney, and I got to close with G Money.
Yeah.
And to be able to, well, even to be able to close with G Money was like a friend that I've been on a journey with for such a long period of time. You know, I think you can see that in the ring. And we just got to tell some unique stories. I got to wrestle people that I wouldn't have an opportunity to wrestle maybe now. Like, not to say that, you know, at this point they may not be ready, but or they're carving a different path. But people like Danny Black, you know, is an incredible talent. And I got the opportunity to wrestle him there. I got to work. It's a shame that no one got an opportunity to see me wrestle with Luke Jacobs, because every time he stepped in the ring, it was magic. And like, we were determined to make that product, that those shows mean something, why everyone was trapped indoors.
Yeah. I'm with the winner of the third women's Thunder Bastard match, Rio. So how are you doing today? How are you feeling?
I feel good. I'll be up, but you know, I've got the key now. So.
Exactly. And like I say, you won the Thunder Bastard. And I was thinking, did you realise that it's nearly a year to the day that you won the final of the Revelations of Divine Love tournament?
I didn't know that.
So, in fact, it was the first show back in 2022, which would have been a year tomorrow. So, kind of two landmark victories for Rio, 1 year apart in progress. Oh, yeah. You didn't realise that. Now that you do,
10 times.
How does that make you feel?
Oh, I love that. Thank you for that information. I like
hitting you with little facts. Yeah, exactly. And today, it was a tough match. There was you. There was 5 other girls.
Yeah.
Would have been 6, but Kanji wasn't there. But yeah. 5 other girls, and girls, you know, women, you know, very, very well. Yeah, the biggest, the best names on the women's scene in the UK, which is probably the hottest scene in the world, to be fair, let's be honest. But looking ahead, you've got another world title shot. You've got another Progress Championship shot. Last year, it was Giselle Shaw.
Yep.
This year, a completely different kettle of fish with Lana. Now, you know Lana quite well, because you've had your run-ins with Lana over 2022. You've had your run-ins with the experience as well.
Yeah.
Thinking ahead, like I say, you haven't called your shot yet.
Yeah.
Where's your mind at regarding Lana Austin, and if and when you might call that shot?
See, the thing is, it's actually a weird thing, because Lana Austin is very much one of those who She is like a mentor to a lot of the girls in the Northwest. So like girls like Lizzie Evo and Alexis Falcon, like they will tell you that at some point in their career, Lana Austin has made them better. So it's a weird one because I do respect her. So, and she can be an inspiration sometimes, sometimes not, but I don't think she realises. I think she might have taught me a little bit more than she wanted to. There's been a few times, like, she's very giving sometimes with the information that she'll give you. You know, I'm sure the Lana Austin experience in Sky Smiths and LA Taylor, I'm sure they're learning a lot being with Lana. So, it's good. But when it comes to me and her, I'm a different wrestler that I faced back in the Revelations of Divine Love tournament. She's a different wrestler. And we're both different people, but it'd be interesting to see now the styles. She's taught me a lot. I don't think she's taught me everything she knows. I think there's still a few tricks up her sleeve, but she's taught me a lot, and I don't think she'll want to do that. And this time, because of it having the key, I don't have to, like, the match with Giselle was planned, like, you know, like, I won the tournament, right, your match is at Manchester, which was preferably for me, because yeah, it's closer to my home. But this time, anytime I want, I can just appear, boom.
There you go. And that's the advantage, and that's the key difference, isn't it? Key difference. See, I'm here all week, folks. Like I say, you, from a professional standpoint, you might still have Sky and LA to contend with besides Lana.
Yeah.
Now, that kind of throws in a different element and a different mindset, possibly. Now, I know that they've been a thorn in your side, haven't they, over the last however many months.
It does feel like,
I'm sure it does even more so for yourself. Could you possibly have a bit of backup just in case that happens? Who would you have in the Rio experience, maybe?
Oh, wow.
If we're fantasy booking here, a little bit of a faction for Rio. Tough question. I like asking tough questions.
Yeah, you got me with that one. I think I'd always swing to girls that I know because I can expect things from you. So you've got, I mean, two of the best that we have to offer in Lizzie Evo and Alexis Falcon. They're always going to be top of my list for anything.
Yeah.
But then, you know, you've got Millie McKenzie.
Mm.
You know, she's another one that's at the top of the list. You've
named a few good ones there already. You've named a few. But since last year, like I say, you won the Revelations of the Divine Love tournament,
yeah,
went on to face Giselle. But in the last 12 months, I think, kind of watching you recently, we've got a different Rio to what we had 12 months ago.
Oh, yeah.
I think you've been away, you've learnt different things.
Yes.
In your own words, in your own minds, what sort of Rio do you think we've got this year compared to last?
Do you know what? I think you've got a Rio with a different mindset. For me, it's all been about mind, like how I perceive my situations, and I can be my biggest supporter, I can also be my worst critic. You know, I'm the one who can take me to the most successful point, but I'm also the one who can self-destruct to the bottom. So like, knowing me, it's having that ability in my mind to get rid of all the negative things, get rid of, you know, like Sky and LA constantly getting involved in them, constantly going around and around and around in circles with them too. That's no good. That doesn't serve me well here. What I want is a championship. Put it, I'm here for the women's championship. I'm not here to like just mess around. Like, okay, I've got a few matches, whatever. But now I'm driven.
A more focused Rio, I think.
Yes, a more focused Rio. And like, I've reflected over the past few months and stuff about, you know, things I've done, where I've maybe gone wrong, and like, obviously, especially when I wrestled Giselle, so won the tournament, had the momentum, I was on the high, and then wrestled Giselle, and I just, again, went from being literally cloud nine, the highest I can, to rock bottom,
yeah,
losing to Giselle. So it's learning how to not let that backtrack me further. So I'm at this position again now, I've won the tournament, it's not letting my mind start to run away with me now and make mistakes of the past.
Yeah.
So it is, for me, it's a mindset. I've not posted it on social media or anything like that, But in my own head, it's all right to say, but in my own head, I've 2023, I'm going to be different. Every progress show, I'm going to be different. And people are like, oh yeah, whatever, you're saying things for sake of saying it. I'm not. I will look at each match I do and I'm going to change things, because this is the year that I'm not, like, I'm getting sick of being caught in like silly arguments. I can't keep doing that. It's just not good for me. So this is the year I'm focusing. And to put it blankly, you either move or be moved. Like, I have not got time for people being in my way this year. I've just not got the patience. So maybe a less patient Rio in the mindset situation.
That's not necessarily a bad thing. Like I say, you know, it can get things done. And what you want is to be the Progress Women's World Champion. And, you know, now the banging's getting louder, but you have the key. Congratulations on winning the Thunder Bastard.
Thank you.
And like I say,
a
year to the day, pretty much, to when you won that tournament last year. A more focused, driven, less patient Rio.
Yeah.
I think 2023 is going to be your year.
I feel it as well. I think it is.
There we go.
But stay driven.
Rio, thank you very much for your time. And
we'll
watch your progress in progress. very closely.
Yes, you can.
And like I say, we can't wait to see what happens next and when you might cash in that key. It's going to be very interesting.
Well,
but
we'll see.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you. I've got to get your opinion on a personal level. And I know that after the show, I think it was Unboxing, and Spike had a world championship match with Big Damo. But one of the highlights of the night for me was this here. And you got two big hosses there having a bit of a stare down. The fans inside the ballroom thought for a second that we were going to get a little bit of a tasty encounter between Damo and Bullet. That did kind of leave us kind of salivating for a potential match between yourself and Damo. And remember, he's the Atlas champion at the minute.
That's all on Progress. That is all on them now, because I want that match with Damo more than I want any other match in Progress. You know, I said that I want Cara Noir, but I want Damo, because this isn't a who's better thing. You know, this isn't like size is all that matters, but just look at it purely on paper or in pictures, like that picture.
Yeah.
At Progress, no one looks like me. That's one of the reasons why this has worked so well. No one looks like me, right? Except Damo, right? And so who else am I supposed to wrestle, really? Because Damo is the second biggest, but is the second biggest guy there by like millimeters to me. And then there's no one bigger. There's physically bigger. There's no one physically bigger than me in that building every time we're in there, except Damo.
Yeah.
And I know as well. I know that one thing that is important to me, because I love all wrestling. I genuinely do. And I love watching the matches between the likes of Danny Black and Joe Lando, Leon Slater. Ugh, it's just incredible. Darice is incredible. You know, I do love watching their style of wrestling. But when they were starting to come through, when Ricochet and AJ Styles and Daniel Bryan were starting to bring the light through for the smaller guys to do more in a match, it was because all we'd ever had was 6'4" plus guys full of muscle or fat, just tearing each other up in slow, big, hard-hitting matches. Now it's got to the point where I feel like the wrestling crowd is starved of that. Do you know what I mean? Like,
absolutely.
Especially in British wrestling, there's other big guys out there. There's other big dudes out there like Joel Redman, like Yeston Rees, like Adam Maxted.
Yeah, Big Jim.
And I could name more. Big Jim. There's other guys that I could name, and I'm sorry if I haven't named you. Don't give me heat in the locker room. But like, but they're starved of that on these main stage promotions. And so that's the other reason why I want Damo.
Absolutely.
Like, I want, you said about salivating, me too.
Oh,
because
absolutely.
I just want to show, especially a Progress audience, that the heavyweights aren't gone. They're just forgotten. And you need to be reminded that this is what it looks like when two guys who could kick anyone's ass, especially yours, not you, John, but the fans.
Hey. I don't want to get on your wrong side. Don't want to get on your wrong side.
The fans, I mean, you know.
Yeah, 100%.
There's some fans that get behind some wrestlers because they think they're the same as them. They're not. You know, the wrestlers that are built like you aren't like you. They're athletes. They just are a similar size to you. But you used to watch wrestling and it would be these superhuman people that you'd watch, and that's what would be thrilling and exciting about it. And that's what me and Damo will bring. And that's that. I need it.
Progress Management, if you're watching, make it happen. So I've got a couple more pictures just to get us to our next point, and that is Defiant. And I think where a lot of people kind of know you from, or where you really started to get on people's radars, Lizzie, was Defiant. And obviously there's some graphics there from you against LDM, of course, slapping the chops off of Kanji there. She was obviously the champion at the time, yourself as the Defiant champion, and like I say, back then as Lizzie Styles, and you had a tremendous time with Defiant as the champion, and a series of matches with Lana Austin that I think will probably go down in Defiant history. I mean, I've got a list of some of the matches here that you had with her, but let's see if I can get my place here. But I mean, tell us a bit about your memories of working for Defiant, because I think a lot of people have very fond memories of when it was WCPW and then it changed to Defiant. What are your memories of working for Defiant back in them days? And like I say, you had a lot of success as well.
Yeah, oh yeah. How it came about was I happened to be backstage at a World of Sports show when they were on tour.
Right.
I think it was in Leeds or Hull, but the promoter of Defiant was there, and I'd never been to a Defiant show before. I'd watched it on the internet and stuff, but I'd never been to one live, so I didn't know who the promoter was, boom, 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 stuff like that. So when he came to me and he was like, I'm Dan, his name's Dan, and I love Dan. I'm so grateful to him because, you know, no one really took a chance on me then. And he did. He gave me a big platform and he gave me a really good story to tell, you know. And he knew my character. He knew where I wanted to take my character, and he gave me some input, but he let me do my thing. And I'll always be grateful to him for that. That was really good, fun working for Defiant. But when he said to me, Rampage had put me forward, and I was like, you know, at the time I think I was only I could have been 18 or 19 maybe, I'm not sure, but at the time I was like, I was watching these lads like Rampage on shows, so for me to hear that people like Rampage are putting me forward for Defiant, I'm like, nah, come on, if these people are doing that for me, then I need to stop fucking putting doubt in my own head, and I need to stop letting negativity consume me. I need to stop letting negative and bitter people around me soak the energy out of me. I need to stop it, and I need to get the fuck out of that mindset and stop feeling sorry for myself and get out there and go get it. And the Defiant days for me are the ones that stand out the most, because that was the hardest time in my life when I was wrestling for them.
Yeah,
and I get that emotional talking about it now, and it's just because I was at a low point. Like, I'm sorry.
No, that's
all
right.
I was at a really low point.
Yeah,
with everything, wrestling, life, relationships, just everything, and I was just ready to quit. I was going.
Yeah,
I just wanted a normal life. Go make money, go start a family. I don't know. I was getting tired of being tired.
So was you ready to jack wrestling in then at that point?
I was
ready to give it all in? Yeah.
I was, yeah. It was I was just having a shit time. And I didn't realise at the time, but my energy that I was putting out there was so low vibrational wise. And it was just manifesting itself back to me in more ways that were worse. And I was just in a rut. Like, I weren't getting many bookings. You know, my luck was terrible. I knew I needed to change something. and I couldn't pinpoint what it was. I was seeing comments like, she needs to change her hair color, she needs to get new wrestling gear, she needs to do this, and they didn't bother me because I've never been one to be give two fucks what people think about me.
Yeah,
but I knew in myself that something needed to change. So for someone else to point out some things about me that they thought I should change, I was like, okay, maybe that is some things I need to change. So fucking lo and behold, lockdown came after the Defiant run. And, you know, we got bad news that Defiant wouldn't run again. And it was shit because, you know, I was on a run there. I was doing really well. I've still got the title in the living room. My mum's got it on the shelf.
Have you really?
Yeah. It was because I'll tell you before I finish, someone reached out to me to fill a spot at What Culture before it was Defiant. And I couldn't do the show and I was trying my best to get it because I really wanted to work for them. And it just, it fell through. I did it. Someone else took the spot and I missed that. And that was, I was fucking devastated. And I didn't, at that time, I wasn't positively thinking about anything. I wasn't thinking that time it'll come back. But now I look back, I'm glad someone took that spot because Defiant got to see fresh Lizzie Styles.
Yes.
And a whole new me, a whole new story. And it wasn't just a spot to fill, you know? So that was everything. Patience is key. Mindset is key. I've learned a lot. The Defiant run taught me a lot. The Defiant run made me realize a lot. Lockdown came. I changed my air. I changed my life. I changed everything about myself that I hated, that I didn't want anymore, that I knew needed to be fucking changed and only I could change it. And Defiant was a massive, massive credit for me finding who I am.
Yeah. So, I mean, I was going to ask you about lockdown and whether that gave you the opportunity to reflect on your wrestling career up till then and, you know, give you an opportunity to kind of think about how you wanted to come back and how you wanted to be presented and, you know, perceived by the fans in the locker room. And you just said it. And I'd say along with the hair and maybe the gear, also the name change as well. Did you wanted to come back a newer, fresher version of what you had before then, essentially?
I look at Lizzie Styles and I think Lizzie Styles was setting a foundation for who I am. She was figuring out the business, she was figuring out life, and I feel like Lizzie Styles exceeded everything that she needed to. She couldn't have gone any further. Like, I don't, when I look at it now, I think that's just younger me that was just screaming for maturity and for like a little bit of hope and positivity in my life.
Totally get it.
So when I came back as a brand new me, I was like, this is it. Now I'm not slipping off. I'm not going to fall. I've built it. I've worked hard and I used it to my advantage as best I could. So I'd be a fool to let it fall now.
And you certainly.